to numerical methods known as boundary integral methods, and in particular a version I've designed which I can prove converges. That means it's free of numerical instabilities. There are qualifications, of course, as I'll mention as I go. I've not done calculations with 3D water waves. I've only done partial test calculations, so I can't say specifically how this version would perform, but it's not so different from versions that are in use. However, there's some important differences. I want to use a coordinate grid on the surface rather than boundary integrals and calculate in the physical variables. And the most distinctive thing here is the way of computing the singular integrals in a fairly direct way. I'll get to that later. But I also, by talking about one version, it gives me an opportunity to think qualitatively about the important contributions to the errors, and some of those considerations would apply to other methods. Yes. I felt embarrassed to put this up in this audience, but I thought we should have something nice to look at while we were waiting to get started. In brief outline, I'll talk about the full equations as we usually look at them and start thinking about discretizing. I'll describe the Lagrangian formulation suitable for boundary integrals, and a few comments about what's been done. And then there are various choices to be made, what integral equation to use, how to discretize integrals and derivatives. We want to get an overview of the behavior of the error, especially we want to see if we can avoid numerical instabilities, rapid growth in high wave numbers. And then I'll talk about the computation of the singular integrals, which is really where I put the largest part of my effort. So I'll use the simplest assumptions. The fluid is irrotational, governed by the Euler equations, with infinite depth, and on the surface is no surface tension or wind, no ships or buoys. So the flow is governed by the Euler equations with the velocity, the gradient of a potential, which is harmonic below the surface. So the dynamics are in the two boundary conditions, the kinematic condition I've written this way. For the moment, let's say the surface is y equals eta of x. So this is the kinematic condition, and we have Bernoulli's equation on the surface for a boundary condition. But at some point, we have to use the fact that phi is harmonic because we have to know the normal velocity, the normal derivative of phi on the surface. And that's, of course, where the potential theory comes in. When we look at the full equations, it's not so apparent why the solutions are waves. And if we want to discretize the equations, it's directly relevant to understand why the solutions are waves. The error in a numerical method, if we do it right, should behave roughly like the linearization of the equations about the correct solution. So that error equation should have an error wave-like behavior. So let's start by remembering the most familiar case of linear waves on deep water, so that the equations reduce to these: d eta dt is d phi dy, phi t is minus g eta. On the equilibrium surface, y equals zero, and to solve that, we transform Fourier transform in the x direction, and we find the transform of d phi dy is absolute k times the transform of phi. That gives us the usual dispersion relation. So the key relationship is how we get d phi dy. I'd like to incorporate that in the evolution equations. We could combine these two equations and write the evolution in this wave equation. The second t derivative of eta is minus g lambda eta, where lambda is the operator that takes phi and produces d phi dy. And we often call that the Dirichlet-Neumann map. It's important that it's positive, its transform is absolute k, and that's important to give us wave-like motion here rather than exponentials. So when we linearize about some other state, we'll have a more complicated equation, but it has the same qualitative character. And that'll...
The Dirichlet-Neumann map is only the map to the y derivative or to the normal derivative?
Oh, to the normal derivative, yeah, yeah. So here y is normal, so I confused those there. There have been a number of existence theorems for waterways. Only recently are there good definitive theorems that don't have more hypothesis than they should. Those were by C.J. Wu not long ago. There are other results before and after, but that it basically says that given a fairly general initial state, there's a good solution of this potential flow model, at least for a short time before a wave breaks or something like that. Lots of models predict breaking. The point here is to know that there's a solution of the full model, at least for a while, and that it behaves in a reasonable way in terms of the initial data. So that's a way of saying that the full state is predictable from the initial state. I'm already forgetting to use both projectors. Well, now I want to switch to the Lagrangian point of view, so the notation will be different. Let's say the surface gives x as a function of alpha. Alpha is a pair of coordinates on the surface, and x is now a point in 3 space. And the state at one time is given by the surface function x and the velocity potential, which I'll now think of as a function of the coordinate alpha. And our two evolution equations in this Lagrangian form look like this. But we still have the same fundamental problem. To go forward in time, we have to find the velocity on the surface from the potential. We can always find the tangential velocity by differentiating tangentially if we want to. So the real issue is the normal velocity. We have to use some integral equation for that, and I'll get to that in a moment. So everyone here knows that boundary integrals methods in two dimensions are very well developed, starting with the work of Longit, Higgins, and Cochlett, and Vinya and Breivik, and I think most codes in use have been based on those two papers. I was inspired by a more indirect version of Baker, Miron, and Orszag a few years ago, and Howen, Lohengrub, and I designed a version of the method in 2D that we could prove converged, which means free of instabilities, and we calculated overhanging waves to see what the method would do. There are many good 2D codes, and so, of course, there are many calculations like this of an overhanging wave. Gravity is going the wrong way. Thank you. Yes. So this is actually a slightly simpler method than we treated in that paper. I realized later that we were a little too complicated there. And this shows it's not so different from other calculations of overhanging waves, but it does show the value of a stable method in resolving the small features. This is a blow up of the jet. It has pretty high curvature, and we can see the points are well behaved. These are the Lagrangian markers. Now, of course, there's a weakness in Lagrangian methods that we don't know where the markers will go. We don't get to tell them where to go, and we're fortunate with the overturning wave that we go where we want them. For other problems, a Lagrangian method without modification doesn't work so well. Dimitri told us yesterday about how this method doesn't work so well for a Stokes wave. We'd have to regrid occasionally if we wanted to follow a Stokes wave for a long time. Now, We certainly want to do calculations in 3D, and there are many groups that have developed good codes in 3D. For an introduction, there's a survey paper by Cai and Yu. Here are three recent interesting papers. There are a number of groups and besides these. And the version I'm going to talk about was in a paper of mine in 2001. There's a shorter survey both at my website as well as some other more recent papers. And there was another convergent version designed by Hao and Zhang. Well, now we have to use potential theory to do the evolution. So let's remember single and double layer potentials. I'll write the Green's function in 3D as capital G. And as for a single layer, we have some distribution of charges, sigma of y for each point y. We get a field from a point source, and we add them all up by integrating over a surface. That's a single layer potential, and we know it's a harmonic function on either side of the surface. It's continuous at the surface, but the normal derivative has a jump. The double layer potential is similar, but we have the normal derivative of G. Now the potential itself jumps at the boundary, and we know that actually those jumps are helpful in certain ways. Let me remind you that G is like 1 over R, so the gradient of G is more singular, like 1 over R squared, but the normal derivative is better than the full gradient. It's like 1 over R, so the tangential gradient is more dangerous than the normal derivative. If you're used to 2D, you know that the in 2D, the normal derivative is actually smooth, and the tangential derivative is like 1 over X. So we often talk about the Hilbert transform. Now, there's some choice, again, in how we're going to find the normal velocity d phi dn from the potential phi on the surface. The way I've done it here is natural in a way, but it's not the most familiar way. There's an integral equation of the second kind, the good kind, that gives d phi dn from phi. Here you see we have one half of the unknown plus the, this is the adjoint double layer potential applied to d phi dn. And that equals this function f. This is a bit nasty, but first it's better if we can solve an integral equation of the second kind. Linear algebra works much better. This formulation was suggested by Ramadi some time ago. I don't know whether they actually work with it or not. So this right-hand side f involves phi, which we're taking as known, but we have the normal derivative of a double-layer potential. This is another way of writing it where you can see there's been an integration by parts. One of the derivatives has appeared on phi. And, of course, grad t means the tangential gradient. Well, so this is singular, like 1 over r squared, so we'd probably like to fix it up some if we can. So here I've split it into two parts using the tangential part of the gradient of g and the normal part separately. You can see this has to do with the tangential gradient. Let's look at the second term first. Here we have dg dn, and that has singularity like 1 over r, but we can even do better because the integral of just dg dn on the periodic surface is 0, so we can subtract, and that's a common thing to do. Now when we do that, that means there's not really a singularity. It's a bounded function, but it's not smooth. So there's still an issue of quadrature, but it's not so bad. How about the first term? This is really the tangential gradient of g. It turns out there's a similar subtraction rule here, so we can again do a reduction. So this integral now has a 1 over r type singularity. We should handle it with care, but it's not so bad. Now the terms are absolutely integrable, and I would also work on this integral, but I won't talk about that here because this is the more important one. Now, I want to compute the tangential gradients by differences in the coordinate alpha. This integral equation in principle can be solved by a simple iteration, but whether that's really fast enough in practice would depend on what the surface is. So now I'd like to think about what kind of errors are generated. And there's a standard outline we use in looking at numerical errors of evolution equations. So thinking very generally, we have some state u at a given time, and its time derivative is given by some function f. And we're going to have some discrete version of the equation. The numerical solution is u upper h, and of course fh can't be the same function as f because we have to replace integrals by sums, derivatives by differences. To see how the error evolves in time, it's natural to add and subtract in this way, and then we think of the error in two parts. This is the consistency error. How close is the exact solution to obeying the scheme? And this part is the stability part. Delta u is uh minus u. So it matters a lot what kind of linear operator df is. Is it going to make the errors grow very rapidly? That's the stability part, and that's the part I'll largely concentrate on here. Well, for the water wave problem, that's not such a standard equation, but it turns out that the error, if we do it right, a certain error obeys a wave equation like I wrote before, where there's a coefficient c, and this operator lambda is some version of the Dirichlet-Neumann operator. The error I have here is the error in the potential combined in a certain way with the error in position. So lambda will be a discrete version of the Dirichlet-Neumann operator, so what it does will depend on how we choose to evaluate our integrals. This coefficient is minus the normal derivative of the pressure at the surface, and it turns out it's always positive for a good solution. This condition is a kind of generalization of Taylor's analysis for the Rayleigh-Taylor instability to see that where this comes from. As part of Wu's work, she did prove that this condition is true even if a wave overhangs. And a very similar analysis for this positivity was in earlier work of Andreev. This lambda, it turns out, will look roughly like the tangential gradient of the Green's function times the tangential gradient of whatever function we're applying it to. So it's kind of like two derivatives times g, and g gains one derivative, it turns out. So this is like a non-local first derivative. If you're used to the two-dimensional case, what's the tangential derivative of the Green's function? Well, it's like 1 over x. So the important part of it is the Hilbert transform. So think of dg, the d here is just schematic, but think of dg as being the Hilbert transform if you're thinking of the two-dimensional case. Now, this equation has a wave-like behavior, so obviously it's very important for c times lambda to be positive. We already said c really is positive, but this operator lambda, it depends on how we discretize. So if we don't keep it positive, we could generate numerical instabilities. But also, so that involves basically the single layer potential, the G part, but the D factor also comes in. We have a choice of what derivative we use. And it has seemed to me that we want this operator to be as positive as we can. And that leads to a somewhat surprising conclusion. It seems to me that this derivative should be positive even in the highest wave number represented. And I suspect this is related to the famous sawtooth instability. And I realize now for this audience, I should have looked up the history of the sawtooth instability, but I don't remember it in detail now. But it seems to me that it has a good chance to appear at this point. If we use the usual centered difference for a derivative, that is zero in the highest wave number, so that might cause a problem. But now about the G, we have to discretize. We have to replace our integrals by sums. How do we do the integrals? Let's allow ourselves to be naive for a moment. If the surface is flat, then we want to do an integral like 1 over r times a smooth function. If we have a regular grid, we could replace by the usual sum that would be good for a smooth function. It turns out to have a first order error, so not very good. But there is structure in the error. There's a specific first order term plus a remainder that's third order. And what's the third order term like? It's f of 0. We didn't include that, so we didn't divide by 0. That sounds pretty good. And there's a universal constant, which happens to be this. Where it comes from is not so easy to see. It was explained in a way I could understand by two good Canadian number theorists. So if there's a point on the surface that's flat, fine, we use what they did. We don't have to understand it. We can just use the number. But at the next point, it's probably not flat. So then we'd have to go back to them and ask them for another constant. This is typical of a certain principle I'm about to state, that the error has a particular form with a constant that's hard to find. And I'm going to say that to make this easier to work with, we regularize or desingularize the kernel, and then these constants are harder to identify. Become easier to identify. So here's the general principle. Generally speaking, when we have a singular integral, we can think of it in the form a homogeneous function times a smooth function. And here I want to integrate over regularly spaced points. So it has the form integral of k times f. To say k is homogeneous means this, k of ax is a to a power m times k of x. So for 1 over r, that's true with m equals minus 1. Now we can compare that with the sum over regular grid points leaving out 0, and the error has this regular expansion with leading term h to the d plus m. We're in two dimensions, so if we have the 1 over r singularity, that's first order. Here's the leading first order term. Order h to the d plus m. And in our example, the second term wasn't there by symmetry, so that's why the next term was h cubed. Again, the constant is difficult to find. Now, do we need to find it? Why don't we just extrapolate? That would be a terrible thing to do, and let me let you think about that before we do the next thing. Wrong one. So now my approach is to regularize the singularity. So we'll replace the kernel k with a smooth version I'll call k sub delta. Delta is a new parameter, the smoothing radius. And we make a choice. So for example, for 1 over r, a good choice is to multiply by the error function of x over delta. So if we're a bit away from the singularity, it's very close to the original function, but we've replaced the infinity by something like 1 over delta as x goes to 0. Now, the same principle holds as before, but this time the constant is computable if we make a good choice. The Poisson summation formula tells us that a sum of regularly spaced values of a function equals a sum of regularly spaced values of the transform. And that's where this comes from. C0, the constant, is an infinite sum of values of k hat, the transform. And if remember, we've made k smooth, so if we've made a wise choice, k hat decreases rapidly. I'll make it decrease like a Gaussian, and then we don't need too many terms in the sum. Oh, yes. 2 minutes? Perfect. Well, but we need to do something more complicated. We want to do an integral on a surface, so it's not a function of x. It's really g of x of alpha that we have to do. So we'll regularize g. And I just want to show you there are explicit formulas that work for the single layer potential, which seems to be the important part. So here's the single layer potential. Let's just suppose we've localized near the singularity. And to make things simple to say, the singularity is at x equals 0 and at alpha equals 0. And I've chosen delta to be h. Probably we'd want delta proportional to h, and we might want to think about what factor. So the integral of this regularized g times f is the sum we would expect plus the first order correction, and that leaves an error like h cubed. Now, we're on a surface, so the geometry of the surface has to come in. Well, if you're worried at wondering about the error form, just suppose we've already taken care of that in the function f. I've already written the integral in the coordinates. But the geometry comes into the constant. Now we have a sum of transform values of g1, the smooth g, composed with the Jacobian j that takes us from the coordinates to x space. And how do we get that? Well, it can be expressed in terms of a one-dimensional integral of g hat itself. And these will all be computable if we choose the smooth g to have the error function, as I mentioned before. So why is there another term here? Well, if I put smoothing into the Green's function, I've introduced a new error, and we want to keep that error down. If we don't do anything, it's an error like order delta, but we can reduce it to order delta cubed by seeing where it comes from, and that's why the second term is here. So it turns out the total error here is order h cubed. For this gh, the gamma that we need to compute looks like that. That's well known. And very important, this smooth g has the property that its Fourier transform is negative. That gives us the positivity in the wave operator that we needed. So anybody want to guess why extrapolation would be really bad? It destroys the positivity. So that's what I wanted to say. I've gotten more involved in computing singular and nearly singular integrals, and there are other papers at my website about that.